for too long, this evil man operated without constraint, and countless innocents have suffered for it.
Reaction to the death of a top Iranian official. It's Monday, January 6th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You can find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, U.S. troops on the move from Afghanistan, hunting a Japanese fugitive, India's streets filled with angry women, a new approach to yoga, and a global race to Mars. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United States airstrike that killed Iranian Quds Force Commander General Qasem Soleimani has ripped through the world and has divided U.S. lawmakers along party lines. President Donald Trump ordered Thursday's strike following angry protests by supporters of an Iranian-backed militia at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. The president's order drew praise from congressional Republicans, but Democrats said it could have serious consequences on stability in the Middle East. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from Capitol Hill.
Intense worldwide reaction to the death of Qasem Soleimani, who was killed in a U.S. airstrike. The attack ordered by President Trump sparked fierce political debate on the campaign trail and on Capitol Hill. The move praised by Republicans.
For too long, this evil man operated without constraint, and countless innocents have suffered for it. Now his terrorist leadership has been ended.
Some leading Republicans tweeting their support for a decision the Pentagon said was necessary to prevent imminent attacks planned against U.S. diplomats and service members. Trump's move coming after pro-Iranian protesters surrounded the U.S. embassy in Baghdad.
I think it was a matter of them saying we can respond proportionally in kind, or we can take this one window we have when our authorities are in place to really take out the main bad actor on the battlefield.
But Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi said the president carried out the strike without congressional authorization, a concern shared by her Senate counterpart.
The need for advanced consultation and transparency with Congress was put in the Constitution for a reason, because the lack of advanced consultation and transparency with Congress can lead to hasty and ill-considered decisions.
The strike leading to a renewed effort on Capitol Hill to assert congressional authority over military actions, although the administration did have the right to act on its own, argues one analyst.
The administration undertook an effort to designate Qasem Soleimani as a foreign terrorist, and in doing so, that extends counterterrorism authorities to his person. So the administration did have the authority to strike Qasem Soleimani.
The broader impact of the airstrike concerned Democrats running to unseat Trump in the next election.
Unfortunately, nothing we have seen from this administration over the past 3 years suggests that they are prepared to deal with the very real risk we now confront.
Another contender for the Democratic presidential nomination, Senator Bernie Sanders, arguing the strike violates Trump's own campaign promise.
Trump promised to end endless wars. Tragically, his actions now put us on the path to another war.
Well, former intelligence officer and former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg said the threat of escalation from Iran was very real.
This is one of the most provocative things, short of an outright invasion, that the U.S. can do with respect to Iran.
U.S. senators set to receive a classified briefing on the airstrike next week. McConnell urging restraint until then.
Predictably enough, in this political environment, the operation that led to Soleimani's death may prove controversial or divisive. Although I anticipate and welcome a debate about America's interest in foreign policy in the Middle East, I recommend that all senators wait to review the facts and hear from the administration before passing much public judgment on this operation and its potential consequences.
But Senator Tim Kaine has already announced he will introduce legislation forcing a vote on further U.S. military actions in Iran, stretching lawmakers' debate over the issue out for many weeks ahead. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines that you'll find when you visit voanews.com right now. Wildfires scorch Australia. China replaces its top official in protest-driven Hong Kong. Tens of thousands march in southern India to protest citizenship law. Cash shortage hurts investment in Vietnam. Hong Kong steps up response to mystery disease from China. You'll find much more when you read and watch VOA Asia Facebook and Twitter, plus the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The year 2020 in Afghanistan begins with the Trump administration vowing to push ahead with plans to withdraw U.S. troops and an upward trend in the number of U.S. combat casualties in the country. In December, the White House said U.S. troop reduction in Afghanistan is not necessarily tied to reaching a peace agreement with the Taliban. Mohammed Ahmadi, a VOA reporter with the Afghan service, has more in this report.
At least 20 American service members were killed in Afghanistan in 2019, the highest casualty since NATO military operations and the country ended at the end of 2014. The deaths came as Washington held direct peace talks with the Taliban, aimed at ending the war, the U.S. longest throughout most of the year. In early September 2019, Washington's peace envoy Zalmay Khalilzad announced he had made significant breakthroughs on peace talks with Taliban.
If the conditions as stated in the agreement proceed, within 135 days we will abandon our five U.S. military bases where our forces are stationed there.
Several days later, President Trump tweeted that he would meet with Taliban delegation in Washington, but a few days later he called off scheduled talks.
We had peace talks scheduled a few days ago. I called them off when I learned that they had killed a great American soldier from Puerto Rico and 11 other innocent people. They thought they would use this attack to show strength, but actually what they showed is unrelenting weakness. The last 4 days, we have hit our enemy harder than they have ever been hit before, and that will continue.
President Trump visited American troops in Afghanistan in late November. The U.S. has about 12,000 troops in Afghanistan, but the president says the U.S. drawdown will not affect U.S. operations in the region.
And at the same time, we're bringing down the number of troops substantially, but we're able to, because of the weaponry and all of the things that we have in place, we can do actually more damage with even fewer troops.
U.S. Secretary of Defense Mark Esper a few days later said political settlement is only way to end war in Afghanistan.
Doesn't mean we'll take any deal, but we want to make sure we have a good deal, a good enough deal that guarantees at least the security of our countries going forward and a brighter path ahead for the Afghan people than the trajectory we're currently on.
Amid news of possible drawdown, U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham met Afghan President Ghani and political leaders in Kabul and said that the Taliban cannot be trusted to be a reliable counterterrorism force.
It needs to be clear that our presence in Afghanistan will continue, and our goal is to withdraw our forces based on conditions that would warrant withdrawal.
Another American lawmaker is worried the Taliban is more interested in announcing a deal than actually ending the war in Afghanistan.
One of my bigger concerns is that the Taliban right now is using this peace deal as a propaganda victory. They are saying we've won. We outweighed the Americans. the Taliban leadership are telling their fighters, just a few more years and all of the Americans will be gone.
But in the last 2 weeks of 2019, as the U.S. and the Taliban failed to reach an agreement, the Trump administration began announcing that the withdrawal of the U.S. troops from Afghanistan is no longer tied to reaching an agreement with the Taliban. The Trump administration is expected to announce plans to withdraw about 4,000 troops from Afghanistan in near future. Mohammed Ahmadi for VOA.
Happening now in Asia news, at least 60 people have died. Nearly 100,000 are unable to return home days after a devastating rain floods the Indonesian capital of Jakarta. Some 11,000 health workers were deployed across the greater Jakarta area Sunday to spray chemicals and distribute medicine. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Interpol has formally asked Lebanon to arrest a fugitive after the former automobile executive fled Japan, where he was awaiting trial for alleged financial misconduct. Authorities charged him with pouring millions of his employer's dollars into his own pockets. VOA's Arash Arabasadi takes us on a mysterious ride currently fueled with more questions than answers.
In this house in Beirut lives a fugitive from justice sought by Interpol and Japan.
We did not notice any legal violation. He entered the border like any other Lebanese with a legal passport.
Carlos Ghosn is a man who had it all. He chaired Nissan, Mitsubishi, and Renault, at which he was also CEO. But in November 2018, authorities arrested Ghosn. They charged him with underreporting his income and diverting $5 million of Nissan's dollars to himself. Out on bail and awaiting trial in Japan, Ghosn fled to his native Lebanon. The two countries have no extradition treaty.
This is going to end in basically a stalemate with him spending the rest of his life in Lebanon and are finding out whatever there is of the evidence that would have been presented at the trial if the trial had actually occurred.
Ghosn on New Year's Eve explained why he skipped bail.
This is about a plot. This is about conspiracy. This is about backstabbing. That's what we're talking about.
Ghosn said he wasn't fleeing justice, but simply avoiding injustice and political persecution. So he fled by way of Ataturk Airport in Istanbul. Authorities there detained seven people thought to have helped Ghosn fly to Beirut aboard a private jet. Thursday, Lebanese authorities confirmed they received what Interpol calls a red notice, a request to local law enforcement to arrest a wanted fugitive.
It's not a secret that Mr. Ghosn lives in Lebanon. We are a state that respects legal principles. We are a state of law, and therefore all measures will be taken according to Lebanese law.
The future of this case remains unclear. Ghosn claims citizenship and holds passports to Lebanon, France, and Brazil. France has already said it would not extradite one of its citizens. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Coming up, India sees an unusual protest. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program host VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. American pop singer Pink says she's donating $500,000 to help fight the deadly wildfires in Australia. She has asked that all of the money go directly to the local fire services battling on the front lines. The death toll in the wildfire crisis is up to 23 people, along with untold numbers of animals. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for much more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, hundreds of women camping on a key road that connects the Indian capital to a satellite town are holding one of the most unusual protests that have happened in India in the aftermath of a new citizenship law. The law excludes Muslims from religious groups such as Hindus and Christians that can be granted expedited citizenship if they faced religious persecution in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Anjana Pasricha visited the protesters to understand what has kept these women, many from marginalized sections of society, on the roads for nearly 3 weeks, in this report narrated by Amy Katz.
These grandmothers, mothers, and housewives have blocked a key road in the Indian capital in the Muslim-dominated Shaheen Bagh neighborhood due to an overriding worry about a new citizenship law. They will now have to submit documents to prove that they are Indian citizens. Among those heading this protest is Rizwana Bano, one of the millions of poor migrants living in New Delhi.
I am from Bihar, where there are always floods. I don't have a house or a fixed address. What proof can I give? That is why I have come on the road, so that I don't have to go to jail.
Most of the women here are first-time protesters. They have emerged from their homes due to fears that plans to draw up a national registry of citizens could threaten their status as Indians. That's because under the new citizenship law, Muslims are excluded from religious groups, such as Hindus and Christians, that can be granted expedited citizenship if they face religious persecution in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Prime Minister Narendra Modi has dismissed such concerns, saying no Indian Muslim risks losing his or her nationality. But many, like Azra Hashmi, remain skeptical as Modi's government is increasingly perceived as pressing ahead with a Hindu nationalist agenda.
I was born in this beautiful country. My 7 generations were born and buried here. Today, why are you pushing us to the margins?
Celebrities such as Bollywood actress Swara Bhaskar occasionally turn up to lend support to what is being called a leaderless protest. Volunteers distribute food, men stand on the sidelines. Delhi's chilliest winter in many years does not deter the protesters from staying past midnight.
There is no financier, no political party, no NGO. This is the public on their own.
Citizenship is not the only issue. Saima Khan, a mother of 4, joins in due to anger about police action last month that allegedly injured many students in 2 Muslim-dominated universities.
We decided we would not tolerate this. There are lots of mothers here. Mothers cannot see their children being targeted.
There is pressure to call off the protest, but already on this road for 19 days, they say they are determined to camp here until the new law is repealed.
Whether I have to stay for a month, 6 months, or 1 year, I will come every day.
In this distant corner of Delhi, Muslim women, seldom seen or heard, are demonstrating that they will be counted as resistance to the new law. For Anjana Pasricha in New Delhi, Amy Katz, VOA News.
This news break from VOA Asia. The death toll has risen to at least 24. 23 more people are listed as injured in the collapse of a building in Cambodia. Officials say an unknown number of workers remain trapped. The 7-story concrete building collapsed Friday in the coastal town of Kep. Visit VOA Asia on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, there's no doubt that many people around the world see, in magazines and on social media, unrealistic beauty standards and end up feeling unhappy with how they look. But Jessamine Stanley has never let her body image get in the way of her dream of teaching yoga. Karina Befridgen reports from Savannah, Georgia.
Jessamine Stanley has 2 jobs when she enters a yoga studio, teaching people about yoga and teaching people about the human body.
To get into yoga with me, it was mostly people being like, I didn't know fat people could do yoga. And I was just like, why do you think fat people can't do yoga? Fat people do all kinds of things all the time.
Jessamine Stanley is happy with how she looks. She loves her life and is busy working hard teaching people to do the same. But it took her some time to accept this worldview. For years, the North Carolina resident believed her weight would prevent her from building the career of her dreams.
The yoga practice is really meant for everyone. White, slender-bodied, cisgender, heterosexual person, usually a woman, usually wealthy. If we're not in that bubble, then we think it's not for us.
But at some point, Stanley realized it wasn't the fashion magazines or the TV. She herself didn't believe she could fulfill her dream. So she decided to be kinder to herself and accept herself the way she was. And in no time, her life started changing. Despite what she had thought, her yoga practice got immensely popular, and large companies like Kotex and Samsung were asking her to collaborate with them.
Because she's different. She doesn't look like what people typically think of as someone that does yoga. She's different. She embraces her difference. She talks about her belly. She talks about breasts. She talks about all those things that we generally don't talk about in yoga class, but it's real and it's raw, and we need that.
She's very approachable. She has a very organic approach to instruction, so nothing she says in class is intimidating.
Today, yoga remains in some places a pricey form of exercise, but Stanley hopes to make it more affordable. To do that, she has made a smartphone app called The Underbelly that has practice videos galore.
I wanted to name it after what I see to be the softest part of ourselves, the part that we're most likely to hide, but it's actually the part that provides the most strength.
Stanley hopes that her example will inspire other women to get rid of prejudices towards themselves and fight against stereotypes. Karina Befredjian for VOA News, Savannah, Georgia.
The first space race pit the United States against what was then the Soviet Union for the bragging rights of being the first in space travel and then reaching the moon. The space race of the 21st century is a global quest to land people on Mars. VOA's Arash Arabasadi considers the cosmos in this look at the space agency's 2020 plans to research the red planet.
Half a century after the moon landing, Earthlings plot a new course in the modern space race.
We plan to conduct the first Mars exploration around 2020.
Agencies in 2020 plan to hurl robot researchers through about a quarter billion kilometers of space to investigate Mars ahead of human travel. NASA plans a mission in July targeting a once wet river delta, searching for clues of ancient microbial life embedded in stone before bringing the rocks back to Earth in the 2030s. China's 2020 plans feature both an orbiter and a lander.
Our plan is to finish orbiting, landing, and probing as we did on the moon, in only one trip.
This test at a site outside Beijing simulates landing a craft on Mars, where gravity's pull there is only about one-third as much as on Earth. The European Space Agency and Russia's Roscosmos joined forces for a mission called ExoMars. They outfitted this rover with a ground-penetrating drill to help study Mars at depth. The team now races to meet an acceptance review in April.
If we would be successful at that review, we would be authorized to ship the spacecraft to Baikonur for a launch within a window that opens on the 26th of July and closes on the 11th of August. Missing that window would mean that we would have to adjourn the launch by more than 2 years' time. So you can imagine that we are all very mobilized to resolve the last risk which we are facing.
A successful landing in 2021 would be a first for ESA after a crash landing in 2016. The UAE aims to send its first spacecraft in July. Called the Hope Mission, it would be the first Arab and Islamic probe to reach Mars.
It's going to study the lower, middle, and upper atmosphere on Mars, and it's going to try and understand how the gases escape from Mars.
Mars currently has two functioning spacecraft on the surface and six working satellites. So far, only the United States successfully landed and operated a craft there. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. And, of course, you'll find us online on plenty of social media outlets. YouTube, Instagram, VOA Asia, Twitter. Of course, VOA News at Facebook. VOA Asia on Facebook as well. You can email us, voaasia@voanews.com. And we'd like to say hello to everyone listening on the radio, Falcon Radio at Adamson University in the Philippines. Thanks for joining us today. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer, Kelvin Fowler, managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard as part of our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.